Welcome back to Take Care, Dr. Kron. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Under what circumstances would a doctor order a sleep study for a patient?
Excellent question. Usually, the doctor or one's family is suspicious that a person may have trouble breathing at night. But sometimes it's because of unusual movements, such as sleepwalking or leg kicks. And other times it's because nothing is evident and the person can't sleep or can't stay awake, and the sleep study will hopefully explain the problem.
What is being analyzed during a sleep study?
Well, during a traditional sleep study, really the entire body is being studied. So we look at the movement of brain waves with monitors, eye movements, muscle movements, the breathing patterns, heart rate. Laboratories will use a infrared light, so the room is dark, but they're able to observe the patient, and in most cases, videotape the patient in case there's something like sleep walking or sleep eating. So there's quite a bit going on during a sleep study. Oh, and of course, we monitor oxygen levels.
How long a stretch or a span do you need to really have a complete study?
Well, the minimum is 2 hours. And we feel unless we get 2 hours of sleep, we really can't be sure what we're seeing is accurate. We prefer to get at least 6 hours. But for some people who have severe problems where they really have great difficulty sleeping, if we get a 2-hour sample, we're usually able to use that information to figure out what the problem is.
So would you walk us through what happens when you arrive at the sleep center?
Well, I hope that most people have an idea of what to expect so that they aren't too apprehensive about what it will involve. So my own advice is to ask questions the day before or the week before so you know what to do. And, for example, can you bring your own pillow to make your experience one with something where you have something familiar? Once you arrive, it typically takes an hour to get connected to the various monitors. The monitors that attach to a person's scalp that look at brain waves take the longest to put on. Then monitors are attached. They're glued to the skin near a person's eyes and on their chin. And sticky pads are put on their legs as well as on their chest. And those are all looking for either heart rhythms or muscle movement. Then there is a tube that will go into a person's nostrils, and it just rests there so it can measure the pressure and the temperature of the air coming and going through a person's nose. There typically is a clip on a person's finger, which shines a light that allows us to measure the oxygen in the blood, and then typically some kind of stretchy band that allow us to look at how well the chest wall is moving. So there are quite a few monitors involved.
Dr. Kron, I have always told friends and family that I am a world-class sleeper. In fact, if there was an Olympic event, I would win the gold and bring it home for the U.S. But everything that you have described to me, and I can sleep with light, sound, movement, but everything you've described to me would be off-putting to even me. So how does a person fall asleep with all of this, you know, stuff hooked up to them?
I believe it's almost a universal experience that when a person's being hooked up and once it's finished, they are a bit alarmed, saying, how in the world can I sleep with this getup? However, it recedes from a person's awareness, and almost everyone the next morning says, you know, once I realized that I could move in a fairly unrestricted way and all of these cords become a bit of a ponytail, which is quite a manageable setup, that I forgot about those wires and I could fall asleep. And they often are surprised how those were not a big deal during the night.
You know, It's cumbersome what you're describing, but people can freely move in their bed and bring their own pillow. But one thing I wonder about is being observed. I think for me personally, I think that would make me more self-conscious, especially if you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. What happens then?
Well, so because the wires become kind of a common ponytail, there's just one plug, and that can be very easily removed from the socket. And Sleep Laboratories should have a bathroom nearby. Many have a bathroom right adjoining to the room. And a person gets up and scurries over there. That's a private spot. And they may call for assistance to help them getting unplugged. But some people need to go to the bathroom multiple times during the night. And once they've done it once, they often recognize that there's a system that works well and it's not terribly time-consuming or troublesome.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And our discussion centers around what happens in a sleep lab. And our guest is Dr. Lois Cron, a psychiatrist and researcher at the Mayo Clinic Sleep Disorders Center in Arizona. And your lab sees over 3,000 people annually. When they come in, they just know that they need to be diagnosed, they need to be studied. How accurate, I guess I'd ask, is one night of sleep in helping you to determine what is the root cause of what they're suffering from?
Well, another excellent question. It depends on the disorder. So if we're talking about something like sleep-disordered breathing, that tends to be very consistent night to night. So if we have a single night of monitoring, we will get a good impression of what happens, whether the person's in our controlled setting or in their home. Now, for something like sleepwalking, where a person may only do it a few times a week or a few times a month, then our testing isn't quite as reliable, and we kind of hope to have good luck with respect to monitoring a person when they have an episode. But if we don't catch an episode, we can't exclude the fact that that may happen, just not on the night they were in the laboratory.
What are the majority of the patients diagnosed with, just from your own experience? And it doesn't have to be exact number. I wasn't even thinking of sleepwalking when we were talking about a sleep study. Really, I was thinking about things like sleep apnea. What do you see? How common is sleepwalking? And what are the other things in addition to sleep apnea?
So sleepwalking affects about 1 out of 100 people. It's more common for children and young adults. We usually work with those patients only when the sleepwalking is frequent and potentially dangerous. So there are people who will be at risk of falling or wandering outside in the middle of the night. Those people need a sleep evaluation and need treatment. So that's probably quite a rare situation when it's that severe. But some of the other disorders that we work with besides obstructive sleep apnea would be people who have unexplained daytime sleepiness, things like narcolepsy, and we look very carefully at the timing of their sleep stages to see if there's a pattern consistent with narcolepsy. People who have unusual movements at night, sometimes that can mean they have twitches. Other people can have problems related to Parkinson's disease. There are a number of different conditions where a person has unusual movements at night. Then the last category is sometimes a person is on a lot of medicines. Let's say they have a pain condition, and we wonder whether being on those medicines is compromising their ability to sleep well, especially with respect to breathing. And if we find a certain pattern, then we can work with the pain clinic to make some adjustments, or we can add some treatment to help those people.
Dr. Cron, what kind of doctor analyzes the results of a sleep study? Is there a dedicated sleep specialty within medicine?
There is. So for many decades, there has been the specialty of sleep medicine. It involves extra training and, you know, extra certification, because looking at a sleep study is different than any other type of study. It has an EKG in it. It has an EEG in it. But it has a lot of different components that come together, and you have to look at how one part affects the other.
For the person that feels they really can't put themselves through one night in a sleep lab, what about some of the home sleep studies? I think there's one that I heard about that takes 3 nights, and maybe you just need 2 or 3 hours, 3 nights in a row, and a doctor analyzes the data. Can you explain how that would work?
So in recent years, there's been truly an explosion in the number of types of home monitors, and they all are a little bit different. The kind of probes a person wears differs. The duration that a person is monitored depends on which type of home sleep study is done. Some of them look purely at breathing issues. Others look at breathing and will have some limited ability to monitor sleep. Some will look at one night. Others will look at, you know, perhaps 3 nights. What is important is that the type of device be matched up with what the patient and doctor suspects is going on. So you've got to have the right home device. Many of them really are looking only for sleep apnea. And for example, if sleepwalking is suspected, will not provide information that will be helpful in answering whether a person has or does not have that condition.
So for the person that is going to do a home sleep study for sleep apnea, are these devices known to provide reliable data?
They are. They go through quite rigorous testing before they can be released. And sometimes there are restrictions. So one type of device that has a monitor on the finger and collects a lot of valuable information from the blood vessels of the finger can only be used if a person's not on certain types of medicine. So some of the blood pressure medicines and prostate medicines affect the behavior of the blood vessel wall, and so makes that test unreliable. So it takes an educated physician and sleep team to know if a home sleep study is the right choice.
Does insurance cover sleep studies?
Well, it depends. Sometimes insurance companies have strong preferences that a person start with one type of study, let's say a home study, and only move on to a laboratory study if necessary. But in general, most insurances, and I'd even venture to say all insurances, cover some type of sleep study because there is widespread awareness that an undiagnosed, untreated sleep problem like obstructive sleep apnea is not good for health.
Dr. Lois Cron is a psychiatrist and sleep researcher at the Mayo Clinic Sleep Disorders Center in Arizona. She joined us from her office in Phoenix. Thank you so much.
Thank you.